Hello and welcome back to Griswold Fitness Podcast. I'm actually thinking about renaming this podcast, but I'm not sure what yet. Something to do with the long lines of nutrition. So I've been away for a while, and the reason being I've been focused a lot on what I need to do as a business, and obviously Diet Club UK as well has taken shape. And again, if you're part of that, I just want to say thank you for making it worth it. I mean, we've been working on this for about 6-7 months now. Every week we've been sitting down and creating content and just thinking of ideas of how we can basically teach everyone evidence-based nutrition, and it's been brilliant. But yeah, that's an update for another episode, I guess. I won't actually say that for episode 20, I think. But the reason why I want to do this podcast is I got tasked the homework, actually, from MNU, my nutrition uni, and I got tasked the homework of doing a little bit of a summary on my module 2. Now, what I'm currently doing is, it's called Mac Nutrition Uni, and it's to become a fully fledged nutritionist. So it's a certified nutritionist place in MNU, if that makes sense. But the reason why I wanted to record this on a podcast is because, again, if you guys can benefit from it too, I mean, there's going to be a few knowledge bombs in here that you probably didn't know, but I wanted to share what I've been doing over the last few months and what I've been digging my heels into almost, and just a little update from me too. So yeah, not done a podcast since last year, and hope you had a nice new year too, and I hope you're still cracking on with your new year's resolution, because I know by now people have been swayed off a lot. But in module 2 of my Mac Nutrition Uni degree, I call it, it's been quite interesting because it's allowed me to understand a lot in terms of how to read certain pieces of research, what myths are out there, what misconceptions are very, very popular. And again, whilst I've learned about this, again, you've probably seen or heard about that documentary, Game Changers. Like, that couldn't have come at a better time, because it was only then that I was able to go off and actually read the research that they claimed of, you know, what was it? Like, something to do with blood plasma levels or glucose in the blood after the meal, which is normal anyway with anything. But yeah, that couldn't have come at a better time, because, you know, there was everyone saying or being swayed towards being vegan. And if you want to be vegan, that's fair enough. I mean, that's nothing to beat around the bush by. I mean, it's a bloody hard choice. It's a choice that you have to make by yourself, not just because a Netflix documentary, you know, said everyone needs to go plant-based because of this, and this. And everyone was like, oh, fuck, I've turned vegan and, you know, I need to eat more plants and things like that. And it's just very, 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 very far-fetched. And there's been a lot of credible posts out there that have cracked down on this. And we as Diet Club are actually just, well, we've bunged the myth too. So what we want to get across is that, you know, it's James Cameron, I think it was, the director of Game Changers. He invested a lot of money. I think it was over 1.2 billion in the vegan industry. I'm not sure if that's the right amount, but he invested a lot of money. I think it was 2018 in the vegan industry. Now, I think it was in pea protein. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was in pea protein. And yeah, if you invested a lot of money into the vegan industry and you was directing a film, you're gonna want to benefit your profit, if that makes sense. So, you know, obviously he's done an amazing job, because, you know, after watching that, everyone was like, oh my god, I'm turning vegan, I'm turning plant-based. Like, you know, let's sack off all red meat. And that left all the I call them OG vegans, the vegans who were vegan before the Game Changers documentary, left all of them like, what the fuck? Like, left all that, I'm like, oh, what are you doing? You know, all that jazz. But yeah, it's allowed me to read that research, and I can tell you right now that not all the quote-unquote evidence from Game Changers is correct. But again, I'll leave that for another module because, you know, I just want to discuss what I've been learning and things like that, and I'm getting on a tangent already. But yeah, let's talk of the, while I'm on the subject, let's talk of vegans, vegetarians, because, you know, it's been a growing interest, but people don't realise the implications that can become. So, yeah, vegans, vegetarians. So, I did a post a while ago, and I'm literally just recapping on this now, and it lists down a number of micronutrients, that's, you know, vitamins and minerals, things like that, that you're missing out on when you turn vegan or vegetarian, or both. You know, not both, but... So, a list of micronutrients. So, starting from, you know, iron. So, you've got iron, vitamin B12, vitamin B6, omega-3 fatty acids, zinc, magnesium, vitamin D and D3, and calcium. So, without this, or these sufficient amounts of vitamins and minerals, you know, you can be left with no energy for the day. You can have difficulty sleeping. You can, you know, longer recovery between sessions and things like that. And you have difficulty concentrating. That's a mild symptoms right there. But, you know, especially in females with needing to have sufficient iron levels, that's fucking massively important. So if you're one female and two, 10 and vegan, then, you know, a multivitamin can go a fucking long way. But especially iron. So, fun little fact for you. Females need almost double the amount of iron that men do, because obviously when you go through menstruation, things like that, they lose a lot of iron through the blood. So typically they need a lot more. So there's one for you if you didn't know already. Get an iron supplement, or again, a multivitamin that's got a high dose of iron inside it. Or again, and, you know, consume a lot of greens, a lot of, you know, broccoli and things like that. A lot of, you know, food that's going to give you that amount of iron too, on top of a multivitamin. But yeah, it's opened a perspective for people in the industry, because before they seen that, they were happy nailing a fucking doner kebab on the weekends, not giving a shit where it came from. And all of a sudden they've watched a documentary and thought, right, I am the definition of health and I'm going to go plant-based. That's a recipe for disaster right there. If they weren't, you know, if they didn't seek health before, then, you know, what's going to change from a documentary? And yeah, there is benefits of becoming vegan. Don't get me wrong. Like, if those, so look at those who are vegan. So people who are vegan and vegetarians, you can bet your bottom dollar they've got one thing in common. They are health-seeking individuals. So, again, that's not me being biased. My girlfriend, Kaylee, she's a vegetarian. You know, she's a really health-seeking individual. It's actually interesting seeing where her protein comes from, because, you know, she favours the likes of corn, of soy protein, things like that, and Greek yogurt. And, you know, straight away, it's like, okay, Greek yogurt, I'd rather have. But the legs of the corn and things like that. For me, I'm a massive meat eater, so we're completely opposite. For me, that'll be obviously trying to substitute meat for corn, and that's not going to work. So people turning, you know, vegan or vegetarian straight away from just watching that is just, it's just absurd. You know, Netflix is not a credible source of evidence for nutrition science. And, you know, if you believe that it is, then I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but no, it's not. Not all evidence on there is correct. So sorry if you're wanting to, you know, gain a few knowledge bombs there about that, but no. Right, so again, massive tangent. So throughout the course, I've obviously been learning other things rather than myths and, you know, how to read evidence and things like that. Meal timings was an interesting one for me. Meal timings. So, I used to believe this when I first started the PT. I used to believe I'll, you know, eat small meals frequently to boost metabolism. You know, you need to spread your meals out to get more energy and raise your metabolism. Like, no, it doesn't work like that. Your metabolism is many things. Like, You know, you got your BMR, you got your thermic effect of feeding, you got your exercise activity, thermogenesis, and you got your NEAT as well. So having like boosted metabolism through meal timings, it's bullshit. And if you want to go over and research about it as well, I've actually got a reference here in front of me that I made on a post. It was by Holmbach et al. 2010. It said, increased meal frequency associated with BMI, waist circumference, and obesity risk. It does not impact metabolism. And it concludes that increasing meal frequency does not promote greater body weight loss. That's by Cameron et al. 2010. So that just counteracts the evidence that was found, and it outweighs the evidence, should I say. So for me, it's personal preference, but that's just not enough. So, you know, here we are explaining different papers and things like that. But I prefer to eat when I can be present. Like, I often push a lot of my clients to sit down, you know, phones away, no music, not even watching any telly, and actually be present in the moment. That can make a massive impact on, you know, on mastication. Be careful saying that word. Mastication, that's, you know, chewing. So you actually get a lot more out of your food the more you chew it. And I'm not going to boil the science behind that, but you actually salivate more. You digest a lot better as well. So it's a lot better for your gut. So, you know, digest it properly. Don't just throw it round and, you know, don't throw it around, but don't throw your food around. Don't just shovel it down, throw it down your throat. It's, you know, be present. Be present in the moment. And, you know, if you want to have two meals per day, go for it. Like, if, you know, would it be optimal if you're an athlete? Probably not. But the general population, if you want to have two meals a day, fucking go for it. If you want to have five meals a day, crack on. Just know on boost metabolism. You know, would it be optimal to adhere to a deficit if it's your personal preference? Fuck yeah. Like, you know, that myth that was thrown around, even I believed it. You know, that's for some, that can be a massive one because, you know, let's, you know, for example, shift workers. Boom, shift workers. They often panic on how to time the meals and things like that. And it just doesn't fucking matter. As long as you're having the same amount of calories inside the day, go for it. Whatever works better for you, crack on. And so yeah, that was one that interested me the most. And it's not just important for, you know, the general population. Again, if you listen to this now, if you can relate to a time when you thought or you worried about your meal frequency, or if you thought you're not losing fat because, oh, I'm not having enough meals in a day or things like that, it doesn't fucking matter. Down to calories in versus calories out. So, you know, if you are allowed 2,000 calories a day, don't consume over that. Fucking simple as. Apply it and learn from it. But yeah, cool. So, module two for me, altogether has been quite interesting. It's made me actually question a lot of content I see on social media too, because, you know, the general population looking at posts out there, they're going to believe anything. If I put a post on fucking, you know, eating 2 kilograms of broccoli is going to make you absolutely anabolic, then people are going to buy 2 kilograms of broccoli and just chow down. But yeah, it's mad. You know, you look for, you know, I personally look out for posts now that I read and I go, no. You've got to be a critical thinker when you're studying for this line of work, and it's definitely made me a critical thinker sometimes. You know, when you look at someone and you think, or you look at a piece of information and you go, no, that something doesn't click there. So it's enabled me to do that a lot more. And to even practice it on my clients as well, I've got at the moment. Like, you know, whether they like it or not, they're going to get this information. Like, I don't know if they want to or if they find it useful, but they're going to get this information whether they like it or not. And for some way or another, I'm giving it to them because I think it can really help. Just like I'm giving you a little bit of an update and a little bit of knowledge bombs here and there. Even though you're probably like, ah, well, there's not much information coming out of it. You know, there's a few. Bear with me. But, yeah, back to the module. You know, things like, you know, how to increase your protein target. Like, I knew these things are able to apply it to your clients as well, and to put it into practicality is massive. Like, you know, you've got someone who doesn't have a protein-rich diet at the moment, and you're trying to tell them to eat a gram of protein at least, or I say 1.2 to 1.6 of protein per kilogram body weight, and to make them do that, it's pretty hard. Like, you know, if you are a 60 kilogram female and I just need to eat double the amount of protein, then you're gonna struggle. Like, so I've come with four practical tips here, and you know, this can be for anyone really, even for me sometimes. And the four tips are this. So number one is supplement it. So fucking easy and often overrated, and even I don't think that whey protein should be a supplement, because you know it derives from cheese and from milk. So supplement it. One of the cheapest sources of protein out there and is the most convenient is a whey protein. Like, you try and find me a cheaper source of protein per gram, I'll wait. So whey protein, it's so convenient. You know, take it to work, things like that. Put it in your oats, which I always do, and people go confused by it. Put it in your oats, put it in your cereal, things like that. It's super fucking convenient. And why people don't do this enough is beyond me. So that's number one. So number two is base your first meal around a protein source. So breakfast, as we know it, is quite a carby meal. Just like carby meal, yeah. You know, you think of breakfast, you think of oats, you think of toast, bagels. I like bagels. You know, you think of something along the lines of that. So, it typically normally is very carby, and people are like, oh, I struggle with my protein intake every day. What can I do? And I'm like, okay, what do you normally have for breakfast? And they're straight away, they're thinking, okay, I have a bagel, or I have some toast, or I have some cereal. I go, boom, right there. Protein source, first meal of the day, why not? Like, again, it's more research needs to be done by it saying it keeps you more satiated, but, you know, if you're struggling every day with your protein source, crack on with having one very start of the day. And number three is opt for a quality source. When I say quality, I don't mean that protein-enriched biscuit that you found in Asda, or, you know, fucking, what was it? What did they call them? Grays. Not a little Grays box or something that's got, like, fucking a slither of protein in it. Like, I think it's 8 grams in one of them. Yeah, don't opt for something that's got protein slapped on it and think, oh, it's very high. Think of a quality protein source. I'm thinking, you know, if you're a vegan, you know, tofu, soya, you know, Greek yogurt, chicken breast, you know, whey protein shake, pork, lamb, I don't care where you get it from. A quality source needs to be very protein dense. You know, chicken breast is obviously lower in fat, so it's going to be the lowest, one of the lowest calorie options. Just mix it up. Like, they contain a high amino profile, so if you're getting, you know, all your protein from chicken breast, you know, the amino acid profile is going to be a lot higher, rather than if you're a vegan. And that's another one that vegans are missing, is a lot of the amino acids. But I digress. That's number three. Number four is higher protein snacks. So if you're on the go and, you know, there's a ton of high protein snacks out there. You go to Asda, you get your Greek yogurts, you get your, you know, protein bars, you can even get a sachet. Like, I think it's just one serving. a sachet of whey protein. Like, these sell them for like a quid. So if you're an office worker 9 to 5 and you work by an Asda or by a supermarket, you know, check it out, look for it. It's normally by like all of the health section, I'd say, but you can buy a sample or you can buy a quick little, you know, little sachet of a serving of protein. Boom, there it is. Mix it in your Greek yogurt, even better. So yeah, there's 4 practical tips for increasing protein target. So if you don't say this podcast is viable, then yeah, get off it. So that's another thing I've been learning too, is just a lot of myths behind protein. So like, it's just, it is really interesting. And to do this actual study and to do this nutritionist, you know, study and course, it's quite important for me, because I believe now the industry is got a lot of gaps in it. And, you know, you've got people like, you know, James Smith, you know, he's a perfect example of someone who's really into his fitness and getting people moving, increasing his neat, doing simple things, but is making a big impact. That's brilliant. And you've got people like, you know, Martin McDonald, who's very myth-busting, and he gives a little bit of knowledge bombs here and there. But in terms of nutrition, he's, in my eyes, my opinion, he's the one to look on. So if you're looking for a credible knowledge for nutrition, then head over to his Instagram, because, you know, everything that he puts up, it's, you know, it's not fucking, you know, it's not biased. It's not, I think this, so I'm going to put it on a fucking infographic and then throw it on. You know, if you're wanting to look for advice, then go to his page, check it out. Don't go to some fit chick who's got a, you know, he's got big glutes and, you know, thinks he's a fucking know-it-all and says, I do this works for everyone. Because it fucking doesn't. Very, very thirsty. But, yeah, the reason why I wanted to do this course is because there's a lot of gaps in the industry. I personally get very triggered by people getting wrong information and things like that. And it's just, it's fucking wrong, because, you know, in 2019, you know, they had the rise of I'm going to name them. No, I'm not. But you got the, you know, the supplement companies giving out all the wrong information and misleading a lot of people. So, you know, professionals like me and like whoever's really heavy into nutrition, they've got to, even though we don't necessarily mind, it's picking up the pieces and it's giving people, you know, information, but it's very frustrating for them. Like, I remember sitting in a consultation once with a client. I'm not going to tell you who she is, but I remember sitting down once and, you know, she didn't really have a very vast knowledge on nutrition, despite having a PT before. And she was just firing all these things at me that this PT has said to her in the past. And I was almost embarrassed, because I was sitting there head in hands and I couldn't believe it. And I was just saying, like, I literally said to her, I am so sorry. Like, this is not what you should have had off a fucking professional. Because, you know, she's left thinking that. And if someone, like, if I told you now that, you know, 1-on-1 is 4, obviously it's not, but if I told you something to do with nutrition now, you're gonna part believe what I say, because it's, you know, whether like it or not, can have some credibility to it. So if I told you now that, you know, a very misconceived piece of advice, you're gonna believe it. And this girl in the past has been told so much lies or wrong information, should I call it. And she's there sitting, talking to me about it and being very frustrated. And you can tell by her face, because she was, you know, even I was sitting there head in hands and shaking my head a little bit, she was sitting there and I'm thinking she's stupid. And if you're left there having had a PT before and thinking that you're what you've been told is incorrect, and you feel almost ashamed that you've told someone that it's fucking wrong. So this is why I wanted to become a nutritionist, like to become a practitioner, because people like that need advice, and people like you guys as well should have, you know, correct information. So this is why I wanted to crack on and do it. And I almost didn't, but, you know, I got pushed, not pushed, that was the wrong word to say, but I got motivated, and yeah, I'm grateful for it. And those who don't know, Kaylee actually motivated me to do the course, and, you know, that was a quick little plug for there, but yeah, I'm glad down the line, I'm not even halfway through the course yet, and it's learned me a lot, and what to watch out for as well. So, yeah, just reading some questions I got from a Q&A, and it was from a previous client of mine, and he said that, you know, in terms with running a marathon, should he do keto? And straight away I was like, no. So I actually responded and said, carbs are very, very optimal. You know, ketogenic diet is not optimal for a marathon. Reason being is because you need that carb stores to actually fuel your marathon. Let's say a marathon, you burn an average of 3,500 calories, and you know most of that must be derived from carbohydrates. So, you know, if you're an athlete listening to this, don't be going down the ketogenic diet to fuel your marathon, because it's just not optimal, and it's going to leave you in such a state. But yeah, that was a question I got from a client, and that not triggered me, but you know, straight away it's like no. So that was one. Another one is, should you be in a deficit or be in a surplus to gain muscle tissue? So to gain, you know, quality muscle tissue, at least a 500 calorie surplus is advised. Not to go crazy bulk and go, okay, I want an extra 5,000 calories, let's damage some health markers, let's raise some cholesterol, let's raise blood pressure, and let's get fat, just to gain a bit of tissue. Because all you're going to get in there is fucking body fat. So, to build lean muscle tissue, you know, you need to, one, feed your body enough. So, to be on either a maintenance or a surplus is going to benefit you a little bit more. But, contrary to belief, you can actually build muscle in deficit too. But my message is to just focus on lifting, and to focus on progressive overload, and to make sure your strength is increasing, things like that, and then question it, because there's a lot of people that don't do this. And my last question was from a female, and this is, well, I have to say the best one to last, because she struggles to build muscle. And for any female listening to this, if you are lifting weights, then please make sure you are applying these, I'd say, principles or factors if you do lift weights, and if you want to increase your weights too, you want to get stronger, you know, more muscle, things like that. So it's very common that females don't lift enough weight, and you know, they're there in the gym doing, you know, lat raises, bicep curls, things like that. And they're not hitting them compound movements. So they're not hitting the squats, the deadlift, the multi-jointed movements to work more than one muscle. Because if you concentrate on isolating everything, it's going to fucking take ages. And realistically, who wants to be in the gym for more than an hour? You know, not even me. So to hit compound movements is crucial for if you're wanting to build muscle and strength. And number two is going to be, obviously, logging your weight, what you lift, and make sure you're applying the law of progressive overload. So, you know, 1 week you're lifting, I don't know, like 60 kilos for a squat. and a week, you know, weeks or week after, you're actually improved on your weight or reps. Like me, I like seeing my weight go up in my lifts. That's an actual satisfying feeling. This can be applied to reps too. If you can squeeze out an extra rep on 60 kg, that's a fucking bonus. And I know many people who would kill to have an extra kilo on the deadlift or an extra, you know, kilo on the bench press, including me. But yeah, make sure you're writing shit down, make sure you're tracking your weights, and make sure you actually, you know, stick to a plan. I cannot name how many people have not stick to plans, or a plan, let's say, or just go in and fanny around every day, and they're just insufficient, and this applies to males too. I'm not just being, you know, biased towards females, it's fucking males too. They go to the gym, they're doing bicep curls, lat raises, and they think, fuck yeah, this is a good session, but I'm not building muscle. What's the, you know, what's the break here? Like, what's the catch? And this is why. Single joint movements, bicep curls, tricep extensions, they're good accessories. They shouldn't be neglected, but you should prioritize your programs around compound movements. You know, get the big heavy stuff done first. Hit the multi-joints, hit the, you know, hit the major muscle groups. And then what about the accessory movements? You know, the compounds take the most energy. The accessories take little to, you know, some energy. Depends on how intense you are. And the last one is actually train with intensity. Like, if you hit 12 reps, let's say 12 reps here. If you hit 12 reps on a leg press, and by the 12th rep, you put the weight back up, you rack it in, and you're like, ah, good set. That was strong. Let's do another one. And if you're just like, you know, your heart rate's not up high, you're not bloody, you didn't struggle in the last rep, you're just fanning around, you're going through the motion, nothing's going to happen. Add some more weight, lift heavier, and make sure on the 12th repetition, you are near screaming. Like, that's my opinion. That's my major piece of advice. So yeah, that's my major piece of advice for females. So one, lift heavier, apply low progressive overload, you know, more joint movements, things like that, and track your weights. And that goes for males too, before you start messaging me. But yeah, listen, I wanted to keep this podcast quite short because even though there's a few knowledge bombs in there, I wanted to just review what I've been doing over the last few months. And yes, I have been coming into business with Diet Club UK. And I'll just tell you what that is before I wrap this up. So Diet Club UK is an evidence-based teaching model. So what we do is once a week, we have a live one-to-one meeting. Sort of like someone you're thinking about right now, who's, you know, currently in the industry, but we actually teach evidence-based nutrition, and we get people versed up into what PTs know, and even more too. Even probably better than some PTs out there today. And we want people, or and our members, to be on our level, if that makes sense, to be on our wavelength when it comes to nutrition. And if that happens for them, you know, they're going to get massive results. They're going to, you know, overcome the eating habits or bad habits. They're going to, you know, they're going to get a healthy relationship from food, and they're going to get coached and mentored by, you know, three very skilled professionals. So if you're thinking about either gaining some more knowledge but haven't got the money to go full-fledged PT and invest in a PT, then Diet Club UK are hosting a online and live one-to-one meeting. Online, where you access a library full of videos, tutorials on how to achieve certain, you know, certain diets, information and research about certain diets too, and also how to work out your macronutrients, your calories, and what's going to be the best suited approach to you. and we keep the fundamental in mind, either being fat loss, muscle gain, things like that. We keep the fundamental in mind and we choose the best method for you, and we discuss that. So if you're thinking about, you know, jumping on board, or if you're thinking about gaining more information, or if you're someone who's really struggling with their eating habits, or if you've got a bad relationship with food, then get in touch. This is what we want to do. We want to help people like you. If you're one of the above, then we want to help people like you. So if you are interested, if you want to become a member, if you want to speak to us, then head over to our Instagram at DietClubUK, or head to our website at www.dietcluburk.com and book a call with our coaches. Just get more information on what this is. To be honest with you, when we first launched, me and Dave, that's the other coach, me and Dave turned around like after the meeting, when we explained to the members that were there what it actually is, we turned around and we looked at each other in the eye and we thought, we said, hey, this is a very, very good idea. And when we spoke about it to them, when we explained it, we took a step back and we thought, you know what, this is a brilliant idea. But yeah, if you're wanting to book on, get more information, then head to the website or check out the Instagram page. But I'm going to wrap this up now because it's been 36 minutes. So guys, thanks for checking in, and I will see you on the next podcast. Hopefully I'm going to be doing some more of these now, quite more frequently, depending on the feedback I get from this one. So put it on your story, screenshot, tell your friends, tell someone, make it more known, do me a favour, I smile when that happens. And yeah, I will see you guys soon. Adios.